When a sound dances, it's a song. When you hear the song, sing along. Sing along when you hear the song. When a sound dances, it's a song. When you hear the song, sing along. Sing along.
Good morning. This is the Artist Experience Radio Show. Tom and I are here. We have a unique mission. We investigate the inward experiences of engagement with art, and we desire to make them explicit, both in the creator and in you, our listeners. Tom and I are trying to demystify art, making your art adventure richer and more enjoyable whenever you experience the visual. We try to bring to light your experiences, unfolding them into larger, brighter, more richly contoured surfaces, and transforming vague awareness into definite knowledge. We have an Arted Experience page on Facebook where we put images of the things we're talking about, and it's also a place where we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback. So please look at our page if you can while you're listening, and you can stream the program at TacomaRadio.org. Also, we're putting podcasts of this show on my website, SheilaBlake.com, and on ArtAsExperience.com, so you can listen anytime. And the podcast can also be found on iTunes.
Good morning, everyone. Today we're going to be discussing, and hopefully it'll be a somewhat humorous discussion, about the phenomenon of art openings and art premieres. That's the night when the artist is waiting for the crowd to show up and view their efforts and their work and possibly the newest pieces that no one's ever seen yet. It's people will be looking at art hopefully and schmoozing and wining and dining with the art connoisseurs, art collectors, art critics, artist friends and relatives, artist wannabes, and possibly BS artists. There's a lot of variety there at an art opening or an art premiere. And we're going to talk about art openings in conjunction with an art opening that we went at the Katzen Center of American University, which is a wonderful art center here in D.C., northwest by American University. And we went to go see Grace Hartigan and Helene Hesbrun, Reframing Abstract Expressionism. The Katzen Center, which is part of American U, is on the corner of Massachusetts Avenue and Nebraska Avenue in Northwest. It's free and open to the public. There is a parking lot associated with it next door to the Art Center. There's also some limited parking along the street on Massachusetts Avenue. It's metro accessible with Tenleytown, and then you have to take the AU shuttle to the Katzen Center. It's a kind of a long walk if you walk from there. And the Katzen Center is an art building with a lot of different galleries, a lot of exhibitions going on simultaneously. And they have an opening that's like one night where all the galleries are open in the entire center, and there's wine and food. And you can't go into the galleries with food, but you certainly could talk and schmooze outside the center. And there was a huge crowd that night, mm-hmm. and it was quite a buzz at the opening. In the first part of the program, we're going to talk about generalities about art openings. And in the second half, Sheila and I are going to confess about some of our personal stories about art openings in an anecdotal and hopefully humorous way. And that's what we like to do on the Artist Experience Radio program, share about our experience as well. Sheila, please talk a little about this, the importance of art openings and how, instrumental they are in a way of revealing the artist's work and possibly about the artist.
Well, okay, Tom, I'm going to talk about you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I am.
Oh, goodness.
Because before I knew you and before we became friends, we went to a show of your work. It was in someone's house, and the walls, he had taken everything off the walls. The house was cleared, and the walls were filled with your work. And I picked one out that I wanted immediately. And I don't do that.
Thank you, Sheila.
Oh, wow. It was beautiful. I didn't really understand what you were doing, but it was just beautiful. And, of course, by the time I went to buy it, it was sold. And I still remember it. So I bought something else, which I live with and look at every day. over time, Peter and I have bought more of your work. And then at the show, you gave a short talk, and it was about patronage. This particular show, 10% of the proceeds were going to a charity in India, which the owner of the house was supporting. And the speech you gave was about how important it is to buy art. That is, without patrons, there would be no artists. It was a speech that took courage and made sense. And I think about that a lot.
Well, I'm glad you remember, because I don't remember a thing about
that. No, it was very good.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, it's the kind of thing is when you're a young artist, I think you kind of think a lot about, you know, art openings and how important they are. I don't know. Has it changed? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, okay. So my first year in art school in New York, the students in my class were talking about going to an art opening. I didn't really know what an art opening was.
Interesting, yes.
And for our sculpture teacher, James Rosati, and I was clueless. I do remember what I decided to wear, and then a few of us went uptown to the gallery. All this was new to me, but Mr. Rosati was a sweet guy. He wasn't like my first sculpture teacher who wanted me to think about form when I was just trying to get the eyes right. I was going to think about the form later.
Right.
And I said I was clueless. But what I remember was a beautifully lit gallery. It was very formal with cast bronze sculptures on pedestals. The gallery was formal in a way that I wasn't used to. And somehow in my nervousness, I spun around and knocked one of the heads right off the pedestal onto the floor. I really did that.
Oh, my God. I would have been mortified.
And Mrs. Rosati, she was so young and pretty, she came right over and she said, "Are you all right?" They were really nice people.
Wow. Well, that's definitely would stick mm-hmm. with me if I knocked over a sculpture at an art opening. Oh, my God, I would have put a paper bag over my mm-hmm. head and walked out of the exhibition space. Well, Sheila and I, we went to the Katz Center because Grace Hardigan was one of the artists featured, the second generation abstract expressionist. And I always tell my students that her painting is sitting next to Jackson Pollock's in the National Gallery mm-hmm. right now in the East Wing. And that says something about later in life when she became recognized. But she was the head of the Hofburger School of Painting at the Maryland Institute College of Art. And I was a graduate assistant in 1997 to 1998. So I got a lot of stories about art openings from Grace Hardigan. And you know, we went to go see her show with Helene Hesbrun, who were both educators, Grace Hardigan at the Maryland Institute and Helene Hesbrun at American University. And she taught for years there until her untimely death. She died very, very young, and Grace Hardigan lived on until 2008. Mm. Talk a little about them.
I'd love to. Well, Grace Hardigan, she was born in 1922, and she lived till 2008. And Helene Hesbrun was born also the same year, 1922, and she only lived till 1984. And they were both remarkable painters of the abstract expressionist generation. They were a little bit younger than the first tier. And they were both women, and they broke the barrier of male domination of the abstract expressionists, which also included Joan Mitchell, Harriet Frankenthaler, and Hedda Stern. I'm still reading this book, Ninth Street Women. So I'm very involved in Grace Hardigan's life now and what it took, how she became part of this this group of people that were so driven to paint. It was Grace Hardigan, Helen Frankenthaler, Elaine de Kooning, Lee Krasner. They opened the door to women artists in the 40s and early 50s. But even so, the book has much to do about the men because they ruled and the women made enough money so they could stay alive and working and so that they can both, their artist partners and them could stay alive and working, and they arranged their careers and connections and introduced them to collectors and critics and kept them in line at art openings, that is their men. As Tom mentioned, they lived and worked as influential artists and teachers in the Baltimore-Washington region for many decades. An important other detail about Grace Hardigan and Helene Hesbrun is that they chose to work outside of New York, the center of art in America at that time. And in some ways, they were freed to become very different artists and to develop their own dialogue with painting away from the shifting fashions and the pressures of the commercial mainstream. Although they began their careers as gestural abstractionists in the mold of Pollock and de Kooning, both went on to reinvent and revitalize the signature styles of the abstract expressionist movement in powerful and personal ways.
Well, you know, as you're saying this, Sheila, I'm thinking about the times when I would be alone with Grace Hartigan in my studio, and we'd be talking about the art history and the history of art in that very, very exciting time of abstract expressionism. Mm-hmm. And it was, I guess I feel so treated and just so lucky and blessed in a way that I got it right from the person who lived in that era. Mm-hmm. And she talked a lot about art openings. And art openings were strange affairs, and I think Grace Hartigan admitted that to me very often. And I definitely think art openings are very strange affairs for the artist. But I want to share a few stories that Grace Hartigan talked about in art openings in her day. Well, Grace Hartigan knew Jackson Pollock. She didn't know him as intimately as some of the other abstract expressionists like Franz Kline, Alfred Leslie, Larry Rivers. She was very friendly with Larry Rivers and Joan Mitchell. But she once shared a story about Jackson Pollock, and he was basically a social misfit. He didn't do well in the public eye, mm-hmm. and he had a lot of issues communicating verbally. And he she said this, and this is a quote from Grace Hartigan: he couldn't talk his way out of a paper bag. She said that. I remember the visual. I mean, I could see her saying that right now. And he was so uncomfortable, and a lot of times he was probably inebriated at his art openings because he needed, you know, that to kind of soothe the blow from a lot of this energy at an art opening and the critics in New York and so on. And she said it was kind of a sad sight. In other words, the artist was really the most vulnerable at that moment. Mm-hmm. And Jackson Pollock was such a vulnerable guy that mm-hmm. he really had a lot of trouble. And this was depicted very, very nicely in the great film called Pollock from 2000. Yeah. Do you remember? That was
terrific movie.
Yeah, about an artist. It mm-hmm. was. And it starred Ed Harris as Jackson Pollock. And it's amazing how they looked pretty alike. Mm-hmm. And it was an excellent film about an artist. And Marcia Gay Harden was in it, plays his wife. It showed there was a scene in the movie. Remember that he's at the opening and his mother shows up and he says, "Hi, Mom." And he's just a wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an absolute wreck. And then, you know, Clement Greenberg and all his artist friends from the Cedar Bar were there. And I mean, I think they really got that sense of his nature. He didn't do well. He was almost stammering. He was really kind of physically shaken by all the world coming to see these amazing works that he was the first to create. And so what about yourself? How do you generally feel about you know, these moments?
Well, I love my own art openings.
You do? Yeah, you said that.
I really love them. I just feel like it's so exciting to see my work on the wall, and I always feel very proud of what's there.
Are you cool as a cucumber?
No. I'm nervous.
Oh, okay.
But in a really nice way. Like, I'm very nervous. But I'm not thinking about the people. I'm thinking about what I see and how great it looks on some walls, you know. Like,
that's interesting.
Really,
yeah. Wow, I never think of that. That's so weird.
Yeah. So I like to go to art openings. Especially if I'm going to like the art. That's something I'll talk about. but you know, openings, they always have a lot of white wine, and you're not allowed to have red wine because it might splash on the art or on anything. And there's a lot of platters of cheese and vegetables and cookies, and the crowd is bumping around each other. I notice that if I do run into anyone I know, we're suddenly best friends. Like, oh, you're here, but only for a minute.
Wait a minute. Hold on, Sheila. This is good. You know, if a stranger comes up to you and says something about your art,
Well,
and you were suddenly friends.
Well, suddenly, that I vaguely know.
Okay.
And then
okay,
there we are. Oh, we're best friends. But you can't start anything long because they're looking over their shoulder because there might be somebody else that they'd rather be talking to. And there are people, influential people around. There are the curators and the, and you know, other artists, and there are teachers, and there are people. So they're looking around. Maybe somebody else might be more good to invest my time.
But, oh, man.
but at this particular show, I met an artist that I know and like very much. And she's always been very complimentary of my work. And then we're standing there, and she says, Sheila, why are you not an abstract painter? And to me, that's like asking why I'm not a Hindu or why I'm not a man. I ask her why she liked that, and she says it would be much more fun for me, and I'd be freer. So
she's imposing her opinion about your essence.
That's
kind of nervy.
It is very unnerving to me because, first of all, I'm 80 years old. Nothing's going to change. Well, this year, I'm going to become an abstract painter. But it's just not a question I have an answer for.
Well, Sheila, you're opening up all kinds of stuff. It's going to turn into a psychological study about art openings. Well, you know, we have probably so many stories. And some of the stories about art openings for me and how I see art openings could be in the tragic realm of Shakespeare. That's how I see them. And then some of them fit the mode and the tone of a David Sedaris humorous commentary on things. So they run the gamut for me and how I perceive it. Because when one thinks of artists are the ultimate voyeurs, right? They're looking at the crowd,
that's right.
And the crowd is looking at them, and they pick up on all kinds of stuff. And my mother would probably admit this, but like I'm probably like an emotional wreck at an art opening.
But you don't seem to be. You don't seem to be at all.
That's exactly right. Well, I was at an art opening last week. I was invited to show my work at the Museum of the Bible, and I had these large paintings about apocalyptic art, kind of dark stuff, but they asked me to be part of the show, and it's a new museum in D.C. It's a couple of years old, but it's south of the Air and Space Museum, and it was a good crowd, and one of my paintings was 11 feet long, and there was dozens of people in front of the work, Sheila. Now, this is where art openings get to me. No one approached me at all about the work. It was almost like they went right to the paintings, which I think was a good thing.
Uh-huh.
They were looking at the paintings closely. But like I was standing there like, you know, like a goon with a suit on in front of the work, and nobody like turned around. Now, my friends that saw me, of course, came and they, you know, congratulations and all that. But it was a very strange because I was eavesdropping, and that's what artists at art openings do. They eavesdrop into conversations about the work. And it was pretty stimulating conversation, and I think they got it. So they were analyzing the work. You know, without me involved, which is probably a good thing. And I think they got it. So they got the gist of what my work, my apocalyptic work, was about. I mean, it was kind of interesting stuff fodder for conversation. So I think that's really important. So an art opening is good to get the feedback and the buzz about how people see your work. Like if nobody was talking about it or they just turned their back, I would have been upset.
Uh-huh.
So it was a good thing. In other words... The involvement of that's what it's there. You're communicating something. That's one of the great things about an art opening is that you're communicating about your work. So I was happy about the stimulated dialogue and interest. And many times Grace Hartigan would say that you got to keep your expectations low. I think that was very, very good advice.
Yes.
Don't go there expecting people to just, you know, throw palm fronds on you and money and all that and say how great you are. I don't think artists want that.
No.
You know, people gushing at them. And she said that let people just do their own thing.
Uh-huh.
And you just sit back and just, you know, enjoy it. Now, there's a part of art openings that I guess I need to get out of the way here because there's a lot of capitalistic kind of minded people that go to art openings about the art and the prices.
Yes.
And how of the affordability of the artwork. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, of course, unfortunately, I'm not one of those, which is probably a detriment to my bank book. But some artists almost like become desperate salespeople. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, I have.
At their art opening?
Yes, I have.
And to me, that just sends like, it curdles my blood.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, they're almost trying to sell the work.
Oh, yeah.
It's on the walls and, you know, the gallery or the, you know, would take care of that. But there's about a sales expectations in an art opening. Yes, we have to admit, if nobody buys work, we're going to be a little disappointed. But Grace Hargan used to say this over and over again, that you don't even expect a sale.
Yeah.
In other words, just let it go. And she said to me that sometimes an artist thinks their best work is in the gallery. Mm-hmm. Like it's like the greatest work they ever produced. And then they have no sales and they're crushed, right? The artist is absolutely crushed. And then Grace Hartigan will say on the other end of the spectrum where it's schlocky work, it's not your best work, you put it up there, you got it out of the studio, and it sells. So you don't really know.
Right.
You can't really put like a crystal ball on that art opening scenario on sales, because sometimes people also have to digest the work.
That's true.
You know, they think about the work. They go home and say, you know, talk about it. You know, some people say, oh, how's it going to look in the living room? Do we have wall space? You know, that practical nonsense that we hear. Mm-hmm. They could shift furniture to put your painting in. You know, so we have to be careful because, you know, sometimes the work sells like a hotcake and you're never expecting it. So I think you never know. And I think that's one of the mysteries of art, you know, in that sense. But I think it's important that we talk about the different venues where art openings could occur. I think that's also part of the game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could have art openings in a lot of different places nowadays. And like you said, I had an art opening in someone's private home.
Yes.
That was the rage a few years ago, remember?
Uh-huh.
In New York City, remember an artist would rent a truck, a van, and they would put it, a big van on the street, and they would open the van and it would have their art inside the van.
I didn't even know that.
That was very big in the 80s and 90s. In other words, it was on the street, literally, for a few hours, and anybody passing by could jump in the van and look at the artwork
this
and buy.
So clever.
It's a very clever
capitalist really
kind of way of doing it. But there are a lot of different kind of venues, and they vary with the art openings.
Well, I want to say for our listeners who are just tuning in, this is the Artist's Experience radio show, and Tom and I are talking about art openings. So I was thinking about the different venues, and it's really important because galleries are especially in the district, there are not many galleries, and there are certainly hardly any galleries that are just promoting emerging artists.
Well, local artists.
Or local artists at all.
And, yeah.
And certainly not the museums. So that you have to find ways of showing your work. The house shows are great. If people are generous enough to open their space, I'm part of a small women's group, and we do this every year. And people start to look forward to it. When are you going to have that show?
And it's
lovely.
A great space too.
Oh,
it's a wonderful,
wonderful house.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Everything comes off the walls, and all of us take our own parts of the house, and then people come, and I sit and drink Prosecco all day. And
it's right here in Tacoma Park.
It's right here in Tacoma Park.
I think
it's
that's very wonderful.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's every year we have a full house of people, and other art venues are museum settings. Of course, that's what we all would wish for, but that's difficult to find. And commercial art galleries, as I said, that's a rare thing to have a commercial art gallery because there's so much that goes into it, into galleries. They have to have a very limited amount of shows. Mostly in galleries, you have to bring your own clientele with you. They're not going to take artists just off the street because they believe in you. Or hardly ever. They're going to take people who come with their friends who have enough money to buy art. Then there's the university or academic setting like the Katzen Center. That's great. There are local art centers, and there are many local art centers that get partial funding from the government, and they serve as cultural centers for art exhibits and concerts and reading, and a place to meet people that you might like to know.
Well, Tacoma Park has their, you've had shows at
the community center.
The community
yes,
center, that's
yes.
a nice venue.
It's a nice venue, it
yeah,
is.
Tacoma Park's very blessed that way.
Right. And then there's the outdoor setting. And I have to say, I've been lucky enough to visit the homes and sculpture gardens of a few collectors. And recently, we are lucky enough, Peter and I, to have acquired sculptures from the estate of an artist who lived a long life. He carved stone and wood till a couple of weeks before he died. And he left about 150 works littered all over his yard, under bushes, piled up. And it just turns out that the executor of this guy's estate, his name is Cy Gresser, gave us not a deal, but invited us to have our pick of the sculptures, and we bought two, and somehow we've acquired more. And our yard is now a sculpture garden.
It absolutely is.
Oh,
yeah.
It's so beautiful.
It's beautiful.
I can't believe it, living with these works and waking up and looking out with the changing light, it's really something. So it's different from having paintings in your house and walking out in my yard. And Tom, we have one of your pieces. Mr. Goldman lives with us in our backyard.
Oh, right, I forgot about Mr. Goldman.
Yeah. So I can't tell you, listeners, what a pleasure it is. Consider this idea when you're thinking about your backyard, if you're lucky enough to be able to buy a sculpture.
Well, one of the things that I've kind of taken advantage of as an artist is opportunities in kind of religiously based gallery spaces. A lot of synagogues, churches, and temples have spaces where artists can show their work. And if depending on what kind of art you make, I mean, any kind of spiritually based work or sensitivity to spirituality is a venue. And there's some really big galleries locally that are in religiously affiliated spaces, and they have committees where they look at the work. It's a very professional way of doing that, and of course the clientele is going to be faith-based, and that could be okay if that's the kind of work you do, and I think that's something that I've taken advantage of, and as you mentioned, the academic institutions are also good because they tend to go a little more towards local artists, not as much as they used to, but they'll pick a local artist once in a while. But nowadays, I think one of the things about I call it kind of xenophobia, like a lot of galleries and a lot of venues for artists are not going to local. They're going, with the internet. They're seeking out artists on the other side of the country, on the other side of the world, and of course that hurts the local art scene for sure. But it's also a kind of status thing, and that's where art openings become a lot about status.
Right. Yeah, and then of course there are all the shows that are juried. I've entered juried shows for years and years. It's a way to sort of get your work out, and if you get an award, it's fantastic.
Yes, and it very much so.
Yeah,
is.
And it's interesting because the jury shows have they're curated so that they usually have some kind of cohesiveness to them, but they're also different artists coming from different places, and I think those are really great.
And the art openings at juried shows are interesting too, because you get a lot of a different mix.
Yes.
You get the artist friends, and they come from all different paths and walks of life, and it's very, very interesting. Well, the art opening for a solo exhibition, which we need to address, Sheila, is that's when the artist, I think, is most vulnerable, where you're alone in this gallery and all your work is eating up all the gallery space. And I think that's something that is very much the toughest thing. A group exhibition might be a little less stressful, but one of the things about art openings that I have to share is it's weather dependent. You know what I mean? You're having an exhibition, and if the weather's crummy out, you're in trouble. because people aren't going to make it, whether it's a snowstorm. I've had the worst luck in art exhibitions. I've had cancel art openings the last minute because of a snowstorm. One friend, it took him 8 hours on the George Washington Parkway to get to the gallery because they were stuck in an ice snowstorm. But anyway, but I have a funny story about this. In 1998, there was a great ice storm. And I had an exhibition at Catholic University. It was right here in D.C. Well, the Brooklyn Metro was like, it was totally like in the tundra. It was all ice. Now, Brooklyn went to walk to the gallery on Catholic U. It was nothing. It was like I needed ice skates. It was a total ice storm. Well, I think 6 people showed up to my art opening. I was absolutely devastated. I mean, I was totally, I was a wreck. Like, nobody was showing up. But the interesting thing is that of the 6 people, like, 3 or 4 of them became patrons.
Wow.
They had a lot of time to kind of look at the work. Uh-huh. It was like, I mean, it's not a particularly a great gallery, but they had a lot of time to look, and I think that was really interesting because it became like a studio visit where I was talking about, you know, the work, you know, one-on-one with these few people. So in that sense, it kind of worked out, but usually the more the merrier, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. The more the merrier is great. We're here at WOWDLP, Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM. And Tom and I are talking about the art phenomenon of an art premiere or art opening in which the artists present their work in a social event. And hopefully throngs of people show up and show interest in possibly purchase your art or talk about the works. I really like to go to art openings, but I'm a critical person, if you haven't already guessed that.
After 82
just
shows.
Keep listening. And I pretty much say what's on my mind. So sometimes I've dug myself into a big hole. Okay, I was at a gallery in Washington for the opening of a wonderful artist, Wolf Kahn. I really do love his work most of the time, and I mentioned him in our last show because he's a terrific pastel artist. But this, I was staring at this big oil painting, big, and I was really looking at it, and it wasn't up to what I expected of his work. I could see possibilities that just weren't explored, and it seemed kind of lazy. It was an attractive painting, but as I was staring and looking longer, a man came up to stand beside me, and he asked me what I thought, and I said, I thought it was a kind of lazy painting. And he this nice guy, he said, well, I just bought it for my dining room.
Oh, no.
He did. He said he just painted his dining room orange, and that was going to look good, I got to say. I said, oh, I'm backtracking. Oh, it's going to look great. It was $75,000, and I did think it was going to look great, but whoops. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Sheila, you got to be really careful
really?
About that
no,
kind of
really.
Stuff. I mean.
Yeah.
$75,000 just went down the pike, and she said it was a lazy painting.
I did.
Well, I think what do we expect at art openings? I mean, and I think that has something to do with the list of people that you might include to the gallery or the venue. You know, nowadays with social media, young artists are particularly good at this. You know, they get out all their invitations on all their social networks, and this is very, very important. I have to say, that's one of my great weaknesses as an artist, is getting out there and inviting, you know, the whole world to come see your work. So, That's something that's very important. I mean, the old days, remember, you just sent out a postcard. That's actually not even in vogue anymore. It's like a waste of, you know, money to send it out to the person. And I know if a person in the old days didn't get an invitation and they found out some other way, they would tell you, it said, you know, that was insulting, I didn't get an invitation. Especially for the people that have been patronizing and supporting your work. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, not giving them an invitation is a real, you know, slap in the face if they put, mm-hmm. you know, dollars down to have your work. And I think that's really, really important. So let's go over the list, Sheila, of people that you know, we want to see at art openings, because that's really going to make or break the event or the evening. And of course, like we just said, patrons and supporters, people have bought your art should be at those art openings. Whether it was 20 years ago or 10 years ago, you know, if they're around. One of the things I guess I have to say is that we, you know, no, you can't expect a patron to buy art their whole life. You know, I mean, one of the things that I figured out, and tragic as it may be, but a lot of my patrons are in their 80, you know, they're 80 years old and 90 years old. Well, what are they going to buy art for now at the end of their lives? Very rarely do they go. I mean, they have other considerations at that point. You know, they're not buying art. But nowadays, a lot of my patrons are very old, so they're not buying the art that they bought when they're in their 60s and the 50s, so on and so forth. And then, of course, you want to invite the local newspapers, right? The art critics. This is very important for an artist. You want to make sure you get it out to the community news, you know, the newspaper here in Tacoma Park or some other area that you're showing. You want to make sure they know about your work, possibly send them an image so they could print it in the newspaper. And then, of course, you want to all, I also send to other galleries to for them to take notice about, you know, you're an artist here, and maybe they'll like your work, and maybe they, I know sometimes artists, some gallery owners feel like it's a slap in the face that you're showing next door, but you're not at their gallery. And, of course, friends and relatives. And then the unknowns, or the list is endless, right? You have groupies, you have gallery groupies. They just go to shows, you know, and they find out about the venues. You have to put in the effort. And I think that's a lot of artists, I think, are a little remiss about the work it takes, not only to get the paintings in the gallery, but, you know, to market. That marketing part of art is really tough, and it's not an area of expertise for a lot of areas. I mean, Sheila, have I left anything out about the people that should be there?
Oh, I just want my friends there.
You just want your friends for the support.
Yeah, I just want my friends. Exactly.
Psychological support. Hold your hand, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's also important to have business cards or, you know, to hand out or to have on a table.
Yes.
So that people can sort of take a token of from the show and remind themselves. And then you have to supply food. Mostly you do. Sometimes the venue will do it for you, but most of the times you have to provide the food and the music.
Sometimes there's music at all.
Yeah,
openings,
and
right.
Sometimes there's poetry. There can be any form of entertainment to make it a more party, a lively place.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, I've had poetry and music. I mean, not at my openings, but I've been to openings. And I think the other thing is that you have to kind of put in. I mean, there's an expense and time put in, but the rewards will be reap back when, you know, when you put up, you know, the food and stuff like that. I mean, you can't go on the cheap. I think nowadays it looks really bad for an artist.
You mean just have bowls of trail mix?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like,
I think
yes. You know, cereals, you know, Cheerios in a bowl, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, we have to be really careful about that. Jill and I are talking about art openings, and we're having some fun because these are, as artists, this is something that's a very, very important part of our lives. We're putting our out there for public scrutiny and possibly public acclaim. And the Artist Experience radio program has been here since the beginning, and we're going on 3+ years here, and it's very interesting a part of our daily lives. Sheila and I putting the show together, and starting on October 25th or thereabout, Wowdy's having it's time to support your community radio, and we have a whole list of supporters, and we hope we're listening to our show this morning, and we're going to ask you next week, and we're going to ask you now to prepare for next week to get ready for Wowdy Week. We're not going to be on the air that week, unfortunately, but we'll be manning the phones and helping out our wonderful station here in Tacoma Park. And we want to bring you the best in community radio, as you know, and you listen to us faithfully. We have people around the globe listening to the show. We know that for a fact. And it takes money to do that. And for all this great programming that we have, think about maybe squirreling a little money away in the next week or so and donating $5, $10, $20. You know, Sheila, what I really like about contributing to our radio station in a monetary way to help this radio station go along, I like the $94.30. $94.30. There's something has a really sweet ring. It's connected to your psyche, the FM dial on our radio. I kind of like that generous contribution for our station, $94.30. And we want you to be part of that excitement, looking for contributions to constructively build this great community radio station.
The light. Even though quiet, sing quiet into the night. It refuses to fall into the darkness of the time.
Into the darkness
and
of
yellow
the time.
Songbirds
gray and yellow
anticipate, fly.
Anticipate, fly.
The earth is cold and hate grows old into the shadows. And let the brightness dance longer than for a while. I never thought I would meet you so early on the road.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Artist's Experience radio program at WOWDLP, Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM. Tom and I are talking about art openings and art premieres when the artists reveal a part of their soul with a body of work that's being shared for the first time with the public in a setting. Tom and I are going to start the second half of the show sharing anecdotal stories about art openings and some of the horrors and human humors we have experienced in our art
and
careers.
We already started that.
Oh, no. I know. I love to go to openings of my own work. I feel it's almost up there with my wedding.
Oh, wow. Let's hear more,
it.
Sheila.
I love to see my work on gallery walls. And if I've won an award or anything, or I get to give a little talk, I love it even more. I mean, I'm nervous, but I'm excited. And I'm always proud of my work. And then I have the excitement of having my friends come and maybe I'll sell some work. And sometimes I'm disappointed. But what I see and what other people see is so disconnected sometimes. And it's just that somehow I'm disappointed, but I never lose my optimism. The idea that art is therapy or that you do it for yourself is not the whole picture. It's really a struggle because any artist thinks of his work as a gift. It's a gift to the world. And when it isn't received, it's a little bit of a heartbreak.
Well, Sheila, you know, we have such a different psychology about this. You know, I'm not going to confess this now on the radio, but when I have an art opening, you know, a lot of people say I look really cool, calm, and collected, which I'm not. I'm an absolute wreck. And I always remember the people that didn't show up.
Oh.
I'm like the classic pessimist at the art openings. And that's something that I have not been able to hurdle. I mean, it's a very, very weak part of my psyche that it's the people that don't show up. And, you know, I mean, yesterday I met some friends and they didn't come to my art opening the other week and they made every kind of excuse. And, you know, I bite the inside of my tongue. I don't say anything. But, you know, I think there's a sensitivity factor here. And I know some artists are not as sensitive as others. I'm not going to generalize that all artists are sensitive. But there is that part of that's very, very kind of, it stings in that sense. Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about is about how an artist should be themselves at their own opening. You know, be yourself. You know, I think that's very, very important. Because it could be a sense of theater in some ways, a one-night passion play about yourself. So you have to be comfortable in your own, you know, literally in your own shoes, which I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes. but you know, an artist could be very, very expressive. And sometimes they go to a new extreme, like they dress differently, or you know, they're not like the person that you're used to seeing. I don't know if you've had that, but I had an experience with a colleague years ago. Now this is our anecdotal experiences. And I went to her art opening. It was very, very nice. She's a really wonderful artist. But all of a sudden, her hair was dyed this bright fuchsia. Now, I'd never seen her in that color hair. So I was really, you know, really kind of shocked. It was a little like shock value. I was so stunned by it, but all I could do when I was talking with her was look at her hair. I was like totally like mesmerized by this coif of fuchsia coming out from her scalp. And then I was wondering, like, why did, like, I was looking at her and talking, I said, why did you do this? There's not even an ounce of fuchsia in your painting. You know, it's like, what is this all about? So I remember I left the evening really like taken back that this would have, her, and this was a very mature artist. This is someone, you know, that's been around and said many art openings. So I think it's important that an artist really kind of be themselves. And maybe that was being herself. That's okay. It's just that I you have to really kind of play the part for the evening, so to speak.
Yeah, but at least when people say, who is the artist? You could say, oh, it's the person with the fuchsia hair.
Oh, very good.
You're easy to find.
And the strobe light.
Yes. But believe me, this is not a fashion town.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Peter and I go to the Shakespeare Theater a lot, and the variety of bad fashion is amazing. I always go for jeans and a shirt because that's all I ever wear. My wardrobe is divided into clothes with paint and clothes without paint on.
That's good.
And you know, you're always safe wearing black. And I know that the show here in Washington, Artomatic, I don't know if they're even having that anymore, but it's an enormous free-for-all. And people dress up like, you know, in outrageous costumes. And that's kind of great. You know, it's like a big party.
Yeah, Artomatic is definitely a big party. For those of us that know, it was a big, usually in a very big venue. We used to be in the Children's Museum down in the district. And artists of all varieties, ages, types, and all kinds of work. Well, one of the things is, I was talking about being comfortable, but I should practice what I preach. Because last week at the opening, I wore a pair of shoes that I hadn't worn in a while. And I had to park like 8 blocks from the venue. And, you know, I was looking kind of professorial with a corduroy sport jacket and a tie, which I very rarely wear. But in the walk to get to the venue, my feet started killing me, and I don't know if it was the nerves. What was I thinking? Well, by the time I got to the gallery, I had this huge blister on my left heel.
Oh,
so I was like, well, you know, I should have left those pumps at home. Anyway, so I was sitting there, and, you know, I'm here. I'm in the gallery space. My foot is like absolutely agonizing pain, and I'm trying to keep a smile on my face. So footwear is really important at art openings because you get, you know, you're walking around, you're talking to people, but, you know, that kind of killed the whole night for me.
Yeah.
And in fact, the Band-Aid is still on that heel.
well, this is a good warning because you are going to be standing the whole night.
Yeah, and you have to be up. You have to be up for the event. Well, one of the things about art openings, you can't control who's going to be there.
That's true.
I mean, some artists could be very intimidated by throngs of people. And like I said before, people have always said, you shine, Tom, in your art openings.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is I'm not cool, calm, and collected at all. And I'm very hypersensitive. So I have to be very careful on how to filter what people say. This is very important for an artist because you could be crushed by one comment at an art opening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. One of the things I have a little message for most artists, I don't drink or eat at my own art openings. I stay away from the wine and I stay away from the food. One of the reasons is, you know, nothing like getting like hummus on your shirt, you know, drizzling down your shirt. It looks really bad at an art opening. And I'll have maybe a little maybe a little water, but I stay away from the goodies. And I certainly don't want a Swedish meatball on my lapel, you know, that's sitting there. So you have to take precautions. But it reminds me of this horrible situation that occurred in an art opening when I was talking very intently about my art in front of one of my big paintings. Uh-huh. And it was a tight crowd of art interested people looking at the work. And out of the blue, in a very serious and healthy tone, a friend of mine just butted into the circle of people that I was talking with. And he said, and this is a quote, "Hey, Tom, these meatballs are delicious. Oh, no. Did you make them?" Now, I have to tell you that the stare I gave this buffoon was paralyzing. That, like, are you kidding? He's talking about the meatballs when I'm talking about my art. Well, I was absolutely blown away, you know, from the gallery. I mean, and you have to be very careful. I mean, mm-hmm. that was a great example of an inappropriate thing to ask, not to mm-hmm. mention say. And you have to be very shielded from these kinds of things. Like a lot of times the people say, like, oh, you really did a good job on the frame. And they don't even talk about the painting.
Right.
You know, I mean, these are things that send an artist off into another galaxy. You know, you have to be very, very careful. And I think you need a kind of I call it a kryptonite shield, mm-hmm. you know, to be careful from what people might say.
Yeah, well, I'm a member of the Foundry Gallery. It's a co-op gallery here in Washington. And I have to say that they have a terrific attitude about the openings, that everybody is welcome, people off the street. I was there and a group of really boisterous kids came in with the munchies and they're just grabbing at the food. And the person who's supervising the gallery is going, "No, that's fine. We want as many people as possible. The more the merrier." And it's a really lovely idea. And there are people who come every opening. And there's just a group of people, and they, like, go to all the openings, and they talk, and they eat, and they drink, and they drop grapes on the floor. And,
right.
and they there's piles of crackers under their feet, and they're totally welcome.
But there are people that just go to art openings for the food and the drink.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a whole list of questions that people have hit me that I've been thinking about, like, for instance, like people like go be they break the bounds of privacy. Like some questions people have asked me at art openings, and I'm being very serious here. Like out of the blue, they'll say, "Are you married?" That's like a question that uh-huh. I've gotten. Like just looking at my artwork, is that what conjures up? And then of course, I've had this question, and this is a very serious question: "Are you seeing a therapist at this time?" I've had that question, so I'm not making a joke here, but these are the kind of things that you can get from a total stranger. And we're gonna close here for in another minute, but I've had people ask me about what I was doing after the show. It's like, what kind of question is
this? You're so cute, Tom.
Oh, stop it.
Of course.
I mean, you know, why would you even bring this up? I mean, so anyway, so this is we're going to conclude. Sheila, mm-hmm. come up with another story.
Well, once in the 70s, I was visiting a couple of artists that I knew, and they lived in New York, and they were making their way into the art scene. I liked them a lot. They were really, really smart people. And the guy, whose name was Bruce Boyce, was writing art criticism for Art Forum. And he was also a painter. And he was doing this as a way of getting into the art scene. And his wife, whose name was Jan Groover, was a photographer. She's a little bit scary. But they took us to an opening of Richard Serra's work. And this was years before Serra was considered the greatest American sculptor. But Bruce was scurrying around like a mouse behind the scenes, and he was listening to everybody, and everybody was happy to talk to him because he could write about them. And Jan was being completely ignored, and you could almost see the smoke coming out of her ears. And after a while, she came up to me and she said, "You know, these artists think of me as a piece of furniture."
Oh, boy.
And then she said that she had the only photos of Richard Serra's work from Documenta, which is an international art exhibit in Germany, and that soon Serra was going to come begging to her on his knees for those pictures. And later, Jan Groover became a very well-known and respected photographer, and there are books of her work. But the whole thing was somehow so cold, and it was awful, and nothing I could ever want to be a part of.
Well, it's about the manipulation of an artist, and here in this case, one artist over the other. Yeah. That does happen, and it's a very, very kind of a frightening thing there. Yeah. Well, Sheila, why don't you close with the final important thing to say to an artist.
So what do you do if you're at an opening and you really don't like the work? Okay, or you don't care about it, but you know the artist. So how do you make a graceful exit? You open your arms wide. If the space doesn't allow it, you take the artist's hand and you say, congratulations.
And you say, thank you very much.
That's
well,
right.
Well, that's a great way to end the show today. And we have Bobby Hill here at the station. And Bobby's coming up next with his great show, This Music. And, you know, Bobby's been around. He's part of our community. And he's part of this great, great radio station. And if you listen to Bobby, think about next week and making a donation for that wonderful show that he's been giving us here for so many years. Well, we're going to see you soon. We're going to go to Italy in the National Gallery and look at Verrocchio. Verrocchio, the great artist and teacher. That's going to be our next show. So stay tuned to a lot of great programming coming up in the next few hours with Bobby. This Music, experience art and visual and everything you do. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
It is raining rose petals, so soft and fragrant in the meadow. Trees play violins, cellos dance, what a place to live. Please don't go, please don't go, please don't go, please don't. Please don't go, please don't go, please don't go, please don't. It is raining rose petals, so soft and fragrant in the meadow. Trees play violins, cellos dance, what a place to live.